Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Golf Week Raider podcast. My name is Jay Blasey. I'm a golf designer based in California, and I do some work with Golf Week magazine on the Raider advisory panel. It's been a lot of fun the last 4 or 5 years, joining a number of retreats and meeting a couple hundred Raiders around the country. So today we're going to do something a little different. I just got back from a trip to New Zealand and wanted to recap that trip for everybody and maybe share some tips and just talk a little bit about the golf in New Zealand and what our experience was. I was lucky enough to be joined on the trip by my good friend Drew Archibald, who's a Golf Week Raider here based in California. And Drew, maybe you can just share a little bit of background about your time with the Golf Week program and a little bit about your history in golf.
Sure. I thank you for pulling me into this program a few years ago now, Jay. It's been a real sort of educational and experience and a lot of fun for me. I've done some great trips and I've learned a ton about golf course architecture. And, I've been playing golf here in Santa Cruz at Paso Tiempo for a long time now. And I think that sort of formalization of a lot of the concepts and construction methods and whatnot has really sort of connect the dots for me in terms of what I like so much about this McKenzie course and other golf courses, around that we've had a chance to play. So, we moved over here a couple of years ago and just sometimes pinch myself the fact that I get to go walk the dogs in the morning and look at the golf course every day. So.
Five doors down from McKenzie's house, is that right?
Five doors down from McKenzie's house. We live on the sixth hole, kind of where your driver might land if you don't quite catch all of it. And McKenzie's house would be probably where your next 3 wood would land from ours.
Well, we've had a chance to drive up to Bandon during COVID and wander through Wisconsin and Upper Michigan on some Golf Week trips, but nothing like the trip to New Zealand. I had never been to New Zealand before, but pretty much everybody I'd ever talked to said who had been there said it was their favorite place they'd ever visited, whether this was a golf trip or not. And so I've always really wanted to go, never really thought it was going to happen, have had a little break in the schedule. Last year was super, super busy going to Texas and projects in Texas and San Francisco, and got a big project starting up here in California in a couple of months. And so I had this window, and a little later today, we're going to talk to our friend Steve Rice, who has a place in New Zealand and spends time there and plays at Terra Edie and TRI. And he had been saying, hey, you got to come visit. And I kept saying, you got to be careful what you say. If you offer this up, I might try to take you up on it. But you had actually been to New Zealand before. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, my wife and I went to the South Island about 6 years ago, right before our first was born. And pretty much immediately after showing up, looked at each other and just kind of said, this is the coolest place we've ever been in our travels around the world. And so when the opportunity came to have a chance to go down there again and see the North Island, which I hadn't seen, I kind of sheepishly asked her if that might be possible, given we have, 2 kids under 5 in the house. And I think if it hadn't been New Zealand, even if it had been Scotland or, pick your other great golfing destination, it might have been a little harder. But the fact that she'd been there and we knew how special of a place it is, she was willing to humor me and make it happen. So,
Well, we pulled it together fairly quickly. And, you know, one of the challenges with New Zealand, and I think this would be a recommendation now having had the opportunity to visit, is that you could spend years there and never get sick of the scenery or the golf courses. And so if you are planning a trip, I guess my first recommendation would be whatever time you're allocating for your trip, allocate more. You know, we had kind of looked at it and said, you know, kind of maybe a week to 9 days, 7 to 9 days, and try to pack as much in there as possible. But I would be happy if we had a month or two, just to see a lot of these little country golf courses and stuff.
Well, there's certainly no shortage of places to play. I mean, the statistics really are, you know, true about the highest number of golf courses per capita of anywhere in the world. It just seems like you could throw a stick and hit a golf course. And, you know, a lot of the, I was really surprised by seeing some of these country courses that we stopped at, some by, you know, as part of the plan, and others just, you know, kind of haphazardly off the side of the road. I think oftentimes, you know, little local community types of golf courses kind of tend to be an afterthought maybe. And they don't not receive so much of the sort of consideration as far as the land that they're put on and the care and feeding that they get, and maybe some of the thoughtfulness of the build. And that was just not the case, you know, down where we were. It was just amazing. Even, you know, courses that had sort of small but operational budgets were just absolutely spectacular on fantastic pieces of land with really interesting layouts and variations of design, and just a whole lot of fun to play.
Yeah. So I tried to put the trip together, you know, again, I referenced our friend, Steve Rice, who's at Terra Edie. So that kind of became our anchor. You know, he has a place there. We'll talk to him about his place and when we would maybe have access to join him there. So that kind of became our anchor. And then we had to put the trip together from that. And probably our first big decision was to basically stick to the North Island. You know, New Zealand has the two islands, the North and the South. I think in real simple terms, just at 30,000 feet, the South Island was probably maybe the more dramatic land, kind of the fjords or the Southern Alps, if you will, maybe more national parks. And then the Northland, while still very dramatic, I guess my takeaway was felt a lot like California. Certain parts felt like Hawaii. Certain parts felt like Cabo to me. So still dramatic land, but maybe just a little bit different in character. Is that kind of how you'd summarize that? You've been to both islands. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I definitely, the South Island is, you know, far less of a sort of subtropical type of environment. It is very, very dramatic and very beautiful. But yeah, more kind of alpine types and big open plains, you know, 50-100 square mile sheep station types of pieces of land that just very different. I mean, one thing that, you know, we didn't necessarily look at, or I didn't look out for at all when I was down there, was kind of the composition of the island itself and how much sand is down there compared, you know, to the North Island, which, you know, I was, I think probably maybe along with yourself, pretty surprised and delighted to see how much sand there was underneath the soil and, you know, facilitated a lot of this great golfing landscape.
Yeah, it really was pretty unbelievable. But so once we decided, okay, we're going to be kind of in that 7 to 9 day range, we're going to stick to the North Island. We're lucky in that we both live in the Bay Area. So there is a direct flight from San Francisco to Auckland. And so that, you know, we just looked at our direct flights and basically decided to make a clockwise loop around the island. Auckland is kind of centrally located on the North Island. And we just decided, okay, we'll work our way clockwise. And so ultimately we ended up with an itinerary in terms of playing golf, where our first day we were going to go to Cape Kidnappers, which was southeast of Auckland. And then head kind of across the country to the west and play Paraparaumu Beach Golf Club, which is kind of the old Lynx course. Work our way up the western side of the island, still south of Auckland, to kind of a country course known as Waverley. And then from there back to Auckland and kind of the famed Mackenzie Golf Course in Titirangi. And then head way up to the north, north of Auckland, 4 or 5 hours north of Auckland to Cowrie Cliffs, which is a more modern layout developed by Julian Robertson. And then finish on the east coast, a couple hours north of Auckland, an hour and a half north of Auckland at Tera'iti and TRI. So that was kind of our overall itinerary. When we shared that with some folks, including Steve Rice, they kind of rolled their eyes and said, boy, that's a lot of driving. I think all told, we were 25 hours plus in the car. When we talked about it on the front end, we said, are we comfortable with that, that much driving? And I think our thought was, well, neither of us had been to the North Island before. That will be our version of sightseeing. At least that's what I convinced myself. I don't know if that's how what your take was on that going in on the front end.
Well, I think, some of the drives were especially scenic. I think between Cape Kidnappers and Paraparaumu there was some spectacular parts of that. A lot of, varying different kinds of landscape and then up the coast to Waverley as well. I think, part of it was just based on necessity. We only had so much time. But I think, yeah, I agree with you. We pretty much maxed out the amount of area we could cover with the time we had. And yeah, if I would echo that recommendation, if people have more time, build in some buffer days or, try and find some waypoints along the way. I think the one other thing that maybe everybody's not aware of as far as driving around in New Zealand is there's not really an interstate system on that island. They have a couple 3-lane highways that connect Auckland with maybe Hamilton or a couple other big cities. But for the most part, it is 2-lane roads, 100 kilometers an hour, very strict speed limit enforcement, as we know, Jay.
Yeah. What was it, an hour and a half in? Something like that? Hour and a half into the 25 hours worth of driving, and I got a speeding ticket.
But, you just got it out of the way early. It was bound to happen, so.
Yeah, so, I guess logistically, we were lucky. We had the direct flight. We got alerted. Again, Steve Rice was our good helper here. He alerted us to the app that you need to get to fill out all your paperwork upon entry. So you fill out this app, you get there at customs. One of the little tricks of the trade that Steve was nice enough to clue us in on is, they are very, very protective of their land. And so they are concerned about anybody bringing in seeds or contaminating their land. And so we were guided to let the customs agents know that we have thoroughly cleaned our golf clubs and golf shoes. And it was pretty comical in the Blasey household the day before departure with the full set of clubs and all the golf shoes and clothes being cleaned in the sink. I don't know what it was like at your house.
Yeah, similar. I had the air compressor going for a while trying to get every blade of grass out of there, I mean, no joke, $400 fine, and they're very unforgiving. I think their opinion is, hey, we gave you a heads up and we gave you all the opportunity to take care of this before you get here. Couldn't recommend more highly for anybody who goes down there to abide by that. And then that app, that Visa pre-application app was amazing. I think, it's pretty impressive the amount of, systems integration types of stuff that they have in place between passport control, visa status, and all of the facial recognition and passport scanning that happens when you arrive. It really was efficient and it worked well. And it was impressive.
Yeah, I thought I was a little bit underwhelmed with the Auckland airport. And that wasn't wasn't great, wasn't bad. Efficiency was fine. We got through. The car rental situation is on site. You know, the cars are on site, but there was no, you know, I, through the Golf Week program, I'm an Avis preferred president circle or whatnot. But this time we rented through budget, and there was no way to kind of skip the counter. You had to wait in line at the counter, even if you were a loyalty member or anything like that. And rumor has it that, you know, car rates are going way up and car availability is going way down. So there, we were a little bit nervous. We watched people funneling in and out with keys. So make sure you get your rental car early and get what you want. We chose to go with a diesel car, which I think helped in terms of gas throughout the whole country, if you're going to be doing 25 hours of driving. And we did end up having to lug the luggage about a mile and a half or 2 miles to get to the car.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of construction going on at that airport right now, like new parking garages and hotels and who knows what else they're putting up. So I think, you know, lesson learned might be to have one person go and get the car and have the other person kind of sit at the terminal with the luggage and then come round, back around and pick them up because, yeah, my arms were tired after dragging, you know, suitcases and coffin bags.
I think most people who go from the States will probably funnel through San Francisco or LA. And so we took a red eye out of San Francisco and we arrived in the morning. I think we got in at 7 or 9 in the morning. By the time you get through with all your customs stuff or whatever, you know, we were getting out of there hour and a half, couple hours later, getting to the car and getting on the road. But I tried not to go through and study all these places hole by hole and stuff like that. What kind of research did you do on the front end? Did you dive in and go all in, or did you try to go in a little blind as well?
Well, you know, I had our original plan when we went to New Zealand the first time was to also visit the North Island. So I had in my back pocket that if we happened to kind of be in the area, I might like to go play golf. And I, you know, just based on the aerial footage of both Kidnappers and Kauri Cliffs, it is just spectacularly beautiful, a beautiful part of the world. So that's kind of the, and then of course, Titirangi, you know, being a McKenzie course, I kind of knew that was there and an option, but I did some cursory browsing of sort of the itinerary that you'd proposed, Jay, but again, I think this is what we were going to do, and kind of just being able to sort of show up and be impressed and really kind of take a, you know, take it in with your feet and standing on the first tee was the way I wanted to go about it. And just kind of have that firsthand experience more than anything.
Yeah. And we chose just to try to stay at kind of local hotels or Airbnbs in the area. We didn't stay at some of the resorts. You know, most of the golf was arranged through superintendents. They had helped us out with the golf and things like that. So our first night, as we headed down towards Cape Kidnappers, we just found a local place, ironically called the Pebble Beach Motor Inn in Napier. But all of that, you know, the great thing now is that the value of the dollar goes a long way. It's about 2/3. So, you know, to get these kind of 2-bedroom hotel room situations or whatever was still only like $165 a night or something, pretty reasonable. And everything was pretty nice and clean. And, you know, it's not the same as the States. You're not going to find all these chain hotels everywhere. But there were good places to stay at affordable rates. So that worked out.
Yeah, I mean, that was something I really appreciated. I think that, you know, it was absolutely like the base standard sort of accommodation and safety and all that kind of stuff was very high. You know, we did a good job, I think, with all those.
So let's dive in and let's take people on the journey. So we, day one, we land, we're luckily on the way out, we got the good seats. We We got the upgrade.
Thanks for that, Jay. The 1K paid off for sure.
Yeah, 38 red eyes to Texas in 2023 yielded a good seat to New Zealand on the way out. And the flight, 12 hours, goes by pretty good if you got that full bed and the good TV screen. I don't know about you, but I'm not good at sleeping on planes as much as I fly. I got 6 or 7 hours of sleep, and I think I watched 10 episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm or something like that. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, pretty close to fresh as a daisy when we landed. I don't think it could have gone any better. And, you know, after kind of lugging our stuff around and jumping in a car for a 5 hour stretch to get down to Hawke's Bay, I think, that was a nice little bonus to kick off the trip with.
We ended up with a big rental car. I forget the name of it. You'd probably remember it. Toyota something, right?
Yeah, it was a Toyota Hilux, which is basically a four-door Toyota Tacoma truck with a shell on the back. Really nice truck. Having the shell worked great. We just keep all of our clubs and smelly shoes and all that stuff in the back. And, plenty of room for two of us there would have been room for four. I think that's a good truck for four. And, you know, your point about diesel is a good one. It's, maybe 30% cheaper than, normal unleaded gas. And, the cars get great gas mileage, just cruising at 60 miles an hour and, it worked out really well.
So now we got our big 5 hour drive just to get from point A to point B to Napier. And so we headed out and we're going to go past or in the vicinity of Lake Taupo, which I had heard about as a cool place to see or visit on the North Island. I guess to put it in terms of the U.S. might be kind of like Lake Tahoe or maybe some other kind of big mountain lake or whatever. But so we head south, we're driving along the not too fancy New Zealand roads. I get my speeding ticket and we get towards Lake Taupo, and there's a golf course that we didn't include in our itinerary, but gets high marks and people talk about, called Kinloch. And so I said, hey, you want to go see this place called Kinloch? So we just kind of veered off the road and we wandered over. I'm driving, you're yelling at me that I'm hanging halfway off the road, you know, steering wheel's on the right-hand side.
Steering wheel's on the wrong side. Yeah, we're
driving on the wrong side.
Thankfully, it was on the right side, yeah.
But, yeah, so as I'm driving, a handful of times you're saying, dude, you're off the road, get on the road.
Yeah, there's not a lot of shoulder on some of these roads. And, you know, so we were testing the ability of the all-terrain tires on that car in certain instances.
And I think as I pulled into Kinloch, I even maybe grazed an entry sign or something.
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that up, but yeah. I mean.
Everything's intact. Kinloch's okay. The Toyota Hilux is okay. Everything's all right. So that was really, I think, our first step out of the car after getting in there. And we showed up and there was a super nice guy in the shop, and he kind of looked at us like we were from another planet. He's like, let me get this right. You're showing up here at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon and you just want to drive, you don't want to play golf, you just want to see something.
Yeah. What's the matter with you?
What's wrong with you guys? Yeah. And he was like, look, I've been here since 6 a.m. I have to leave in 20 minutes, but if you want to go drive around for 20 minutes in a golf cart, you're more than welcome. So we did. So he gave us a golf cart and off we went. And so Kinloch is a Jack Nicklaus golf course, probably developed maybe 15, 20 years ago. I'd have to go look it up. And there is a lodging component to it. So we drove up this big hill to get to a point where there's a big panorama looking out over Lake Taupo. And it was pretty cool. It was a pretty neat setting. Very different than what I had in my mind. For whatever reason, I think I had seen 2 or 3 pictures of the golf course, and I had pictured it being on like a giant bluff overlooking the lake. And it really was much more like a long plain with a hillside. Yeah. I don't know. What was your take? I mean, that was your first glimpse of golf in New Zealand. What was your first take?
Well, it definitely looked like a resort course, but it looked kind of fun, you know. I mean, you played out, you know, kind of away from the lake for a few holes, and it looks like then it kind of went up and maybe back down, you know, one of the hillsides, and then eventually kind of up and over to get to the second nine, and then, you know, played around in the valley there, maybe up into, you know, kind of like a little small finger, you know, up into a little mini canyon and back out. Yeah, you know, it seemed like a good introduction of, you know, golf course for down there. I think it, you know, a great place to stay and, you know, experience the little town of Kinloch down there. It'd probably be pretty cool. The resort looked really nice. You know, we didn't have, again, as you said, we had to get the cart back, so didn't have a ton of time to sort of really get out and walk around and have a look, but I think it would be a fun track to play.
Yeah, I think for people who have played it, most people consider it maybe one of the better Nicklaus golf courses, it was a pretty setting, kind of open with big, long views. I was taken by the amount of kind of fairway shaping or fairway undulations that were there, and then obviously the greens had all sorts of stuff going on them, so it was very clear to me that this was a golf course done right after Sabonic, where Jack and Tom Doak worked together. So if I had to guess, my guess is it was probably done around 2007 or 2008, so what's that now, 15-17 years ago. Super, super contoured fairways and green complexes as well. So, and then, you know, a couple of ponds were added and things like that. Some of the stuff that you see all along. I think what was interesting or it was weird to me was, so the first golf course we get out and we walk around, the setting is pretty cool, but the golf course very much kind of has a feel to it that you would see from a Nicklaus course in other places or whatever. So kind of felt, I don't know, cookie cutter is probably the wrong word, but felt like something you'd seen before. The drive from Auckland down to Lake Taupo, I can't remember if it was, I don't know, 2,312 or 1,622 times in that 4-hour drive that I looked at you and said, look, there's a golf course. Like the land, which I don't even think was the best land in New Zealand at all. Like everywhere you look, it just seems like it was perfect land for golf. I mean,
well, it's like there was the right amount of rolling hillsides, not, you know, too huge or and too steep, but also maybe the sandy nature of the soil and spots kind of lend itself to, you know, the right levels of erosion as well, you know.
It was just pretty crazy. Like those first 4 hours, you're just in the car and you're just thinking to yourself, my God, you could build a golf course on pretty much every square inch of New Zealand that would be really, really compelling.
Yeah, you were the kid in the candy store. I mean, Bobcat Digger or something like that. And you could have kept yourself busy for a couple months.
So then we race away from Kinloch. I think we stopped at the little town at Lake Taupo. And there was another little local golf course that we just popped in at to get a feel. That very much felt like a local muni. But I think the land was probably had some compelling stuff to it. There were a couple of spots that seemed pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. One thing that I think is probably true of most of these country golf courses in New Zealand would be they could probably benefit greatly from some tree removals. You know, as great as the land was, it looked like there'd been a lot of kind of haphazard tree planting over the decades, and peeling back some of the layers would probably go a long way to help showcase what's truly special about their properties.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You know, perhaps it's, you know, just a hangover from sort of that phase of sort of golf course maintenance and landscaping that was going on 20, 30 years ago.
So from there, we raced over to Napier. We really didn't eat. I was starving. Friend Peter Corbacus gave us some insights as to where to eat in that area. I forget the name of the little village that was next to Napier where we actually had dinner. You remember the name of that little town?
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. I think, I want to say it was Havelock North is.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And
And I think that's where the crew stayed when they built Cape Kidnappers. I think that's where people stayed. I think even some of the staff stays there now.
yep.
So this the, and that town was cute. We had gone through dozens of little small towns that weren't that special, in the 5 or 6 hours in the car. But then we'd get to Havelock North, and that was pretty cute. And we ended up eating at a place called Mary's, which was great. That was just what we needed at the end of the night. That was
Yeah, that was an awesome meal.
good food, friendly wait staff, craft cocktails, all the like. It was all good. So then, lovely night at the Pebble Beach Motor Inn, and we're off. We're supposed to play in the morning at Cape Kidnappers. So we hop in the car, we're driving over, and we're trying to find the entry gate. And we find this little tiny sign that says Cape Kidnappers. We're like, is that it? No, I think it's further up. So we go further up. No, that's got to be the maintenance entrance. No, we go back. Kind of went back and forth a few times.
One
And
big gray gate with a keypad. That was
yeah,
really
we're like,
no
okay,
sign.
all right, we'll try the keypad. So we hit the button and somebody comes on. Oh yeah, we're here. And we didn't even have a tee time, right? I had reached out to the superintendent, Brad Sim, and he had said, yep, come this day and you'll play in the morning or whatever. But we didn't really have a tee time. So I don't know how much I let on, but I'm nervous as hell that you're hitting the button and somebody's going to say, yeah, we don't know who you are and you're not welcome here today or whatever. But luckily they're like, yeah, come on in. So the gate opens and we start to drive in. And this is the most obscene, awesome, magical entry drive I've ever witnessed in golf. I don't know. What was your take?
Well, I mean, hey, if you've been to 10 times the number of golf courses that I've been to, and I mean this was unbelievable. You kind of drive in through a canyon. The total drive is, was it 11 or 12 kilometers between the gate and the finally by the time you get to the pro shop. And the first half of it is through like this canyon wash area. They must have had 7 or 8 little bridges put in, just to kind of keep the road out of the seasonal water flow that went down through there. It was almost like this whole sort of anticipation and mystery was just building. We're like, what the hell are we getting ourselves into here? What's about to happen?
This was why I wanted to go in blind. Like that experience in itself, I had not heard anybody really talk about the entry drive to Cape Kidnappers. And hopefully I'm not ruining this for other people, but I mean, we're going along and like you say, every turn, I mean, you literally feel like you're driving through a national park in the bottom of this canyon. And then you start to climb and you're like, okay, over this next little rise has to be it. And then you just keep going and you turn again. And yeah, I mean, it was a don't be late for your tee time. Plan an extra half hour for the entry drive.
Well, that's it. It
When
was probably 15, 20 minutes. Yeah.
yeah, when your GPS says you've arrived at Cape Kidnappers, there's still a half an hour left to go.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And Angela Mosier, who works with Tom Doak, she posted something. She's like, oh, you should have turned the Jurassic Park theme music on while you were driving the entry route, which is true, so true. We if we could go back in time, we'd turn the theme music on. I mean, it was just such an amazing drive. And then finally you get up to the top and you're out on this kind of giant plateau where you've always heard about the golf course residing, 500 feet above the ocean or whatever. And you pull into this very, very kind of understated little barn type of clubhouse, and you're like, okay, is this the clubhouse or is this the spot? And yep, this is it.
Yeah, that was spectacular. Just that the whole sort of experience of arriving there and kind of getting set in the place. It was all just understated elegance, and it was really something unique.
Yeah, this little kind of barn-like clubhouse, or farmstead clubhouse was just magical. I mean, whoever the architect and the interior designer, it was awesome. Felt super comfortable, felt great. And from the clubhouse, you have these big views across the golf course out to the ocean, and super, super friendly staff was there and everything was great. And then the journey begins. You head out and their driving range is looking right at the ocean. It's probably one of the three most beautiful driving ranges on earth, you know. And at the time, I think it was us and maybe one other couple on the whole property or something like that. So you just, yeah, you keep pinching yourself. You're like, where are we? How did we get here? And then it was off for a magical ride. We got it on what I assume is a typical day, but it was blowing probably 20 to 25 with gusts up to 40. And it's a tough golf course.
I've never played golf in that kind of wind. I don't know if it had something to do with the way that some of those holes were set up directionally, but you know, a few of them, especially on the back nine, when we got out there, out on the point, towards the cliffs or other, it's just almost impossible. I mean, there's that one par three that kind of cuts across, and you know, if you couldn't hit a massive banana fade into the wind, your ball was off over the cliff.
Yeah. So the golf course, you know, primarily resides up on top of this big bluff, and it starts, you know, as many golf courses do, there's kind of a cadence to it. So you start inland with some nice and kind of somewhat dramatic holes in terms of the topography and whatnot, but you work your way kind of away from the water, and then you start to march towards the water. So one and two play kind of inland, away over fairly gentle ground. And then the third hole is a par three, adjacent to a big canyon on the left. And then the fourth hole is a long hole that works out towards the water with the canyon on the left. And the fifth hole is going out that way. So this 3, 4, 5, you start this march out to the water, getting dramatic. And then the sixth hole is a par three along the cliff, picture, you know, postcard view from the tee, just breathtakingly beautiful golf hole. And you decided to birdie it, right?
Yeah. So, that's the best hole on the golf course. I mean, the only birdie I had by a mile all day long, cause I made a 30-foot putt or something like that, pulled that out of nowhere. But yeah, kind of that 3, 4, 5, you know, series builds your confidence because the prevailing wind was behind us. And, you know, we were hitting 380 yard drives, you know, with a 30 mile an hour tailwind or something like that, made us feel like champs. And then all of a sudden you get down to the end and have to turn around, and it's just humbling.
So after six, you kind of work your way back up towards the clubhouse with some more inland holes. And then the back nine is kind of this march out to the water again, and then back and forth on these fingers that sit so high above. Again, we were playing in this 25 to 40 mile an hour wind. And so if you caught a hole where the wind was crossways, like 13 is another par three, big cliff and water on the left, and we had a 35 mile an hour wind from right to left. And so, you know, you had to play it 30 yards right of the green and hang on for dear life. And very, very, very challenging. But a really fun golf course to play, impeccably maintained. Again, Brad Sim and his team had it dialed in. Greens were on the more subtle side. I really liked the greens a lot in the green complexes. They had interest. They were playing beautifully. You could hit all the different shots. They worked well in the wind, in my opinion. That accommodated the site really, really well. Mm-hmm. Just overall, just an unbelievable experience. It was probably the perfect way to start the trip.
Yeah, certainly one of the most dramatic visually and, you know, golf courses I've ever seen.
We did get a little squall that came through. We were on the 11th hole and decided to hike back into the clubhouse and take a break for an hour or two.
That was maybe a rookie move on our part. The guy who greeted us, the starter in the morning, says, "Oh, you guys picked a great day. going to be sunny, maybe a little breezy, no problem. So
you don't need that rain gear.
Left the rain gear in the truck. Yeah. So yeah, another piece of word of wisdom, never leave the rain gear in the truck down there.
Always bring the rain gear. But we hiked back in, had a cup of soup, talked to the staff and everybody. It was great. Met a couple other golfers or whatever, and headed back out and finished it up and had a great time. You get to the 15th green and then the march out to 16T and take your hat off, because if you don't, the wind will take it off for you. Whatever. The day we played with the wind that we had, 16 and 17 and 18 were all into the wind. So that was quite the death march. We had lost a bunch of golf balls by that point. And I was concerned that I didn't bring enough golf balls for the trip based on our first round. So what I want to do with each of these is, as much as I love the Golf Week ranking or rating scores, I want to create our own little scoring matrix to kind of guide people at home on whether or not these facilities would be great for them. So I want to do maybe three or four different categories. So the first one would be just the overall setting. And then we'll talk about the experience, all the stuff, not the golf course, whether it's the facilities or the staff or the food, all that kind of stuff. Then talk about conditioning, and maybe we'll put it in the context of, you know, the American Country Club, and then kind of the golf course itself. So I'll go first and then I'll let you weigh in. So my take on Cape Kidnappers from a setting standpoint, it's a 10. It's unbelievable. It's one of the most dramatic places I've ever been. There's breathtaking views everywhere. The entry drive is amazing, all that kind of stuff. From an experience standpoint, again, I'd give it a 10. It's unbelievable in terms of the facilities, the buildings, the food was excellent. The staff was, you could just tell everything was great. And they have a hotel component there that's very, very high end. I think, you know, probably over $1,000 a night to stay. But you could tell that it would be one of the great facilities anywhere in the world. So I thought that was awesome. Conditioning, impeccable. I know that they've had kind of a roller coaster in terms of they've had interesting weather patterns over the years. And so they've maybe had some struggles, but the day we played it, it was great. The ball was rolling. You could play the ball on the ground if you wanted to. The surfaces were perfect. And then the golf course, I like the golf course a lot. I think it would be fun to play again, over and over again, see it in different winds and things like that. There were stretches of the golf course that I liked more than others. I love that kind of 3-6 stretch. Didn't necessarily love the 7-9 stretch. Didn't love kind of how the 11th hole fit in the equation, to some of those things. And at least on our day, the march back to the clubhouse felt like it was really tough. The other thing that was weird to me was it seemed like the driving range got some of the best land. I would have, maybe had golf where the driving range was and get the driving range into some of the less spectacular land. But so I don't know. I would say 10s for setting and facilities or experience and conditioning, and then for the golf course, I don't know, maybe a 7 or so. Something like that. What was your take on Cape Kidnappers?
Well, yeah, hard to argue with any of those high marks for sort of the experience and the location. That was just phenomenal. I mean, I guess a couple other things I would add is the staff, you know, were fantastic, extremely knowledgeable, well-traveled. We talked to people who had, you know, been to a lot of the places in California that we'd been, or had, you know, been, you know, working at some really notable courses on Long Island and whatnot, kind of. And so this was just another stop for them. And it was, you know, real interesting, you know, kind of rich conversations to have. The other thing that, you know, I would agree with is there's a few places where, you know, I guess from your point of view, Jay, I wonder if, you know, it'd be interesting to talk to somebody who was involved with that routing, whether it's Tom or one of the folks he was working with, to kind of understand some of the challenges maybe that he was trying to address. Because I think you know, there was that one finger that was unused out the back of between 10 and 11, was it? That was just this really cool place to potentially throw a green complex. So it'll be interesting to kind of hear that.
So yeah, getting to 18. So Tom's book, Getting to 18, talks about how the evolution of the routing came about. And so that book is huge. It takes up the full size of a coffee table. So I didn't bring it with us to New Zealand. But when I got back, I went back and kind of reread that chapter. And that was interesting to learn about where things were going to go originally and how there was a desire to build this this hole that went halfway down the cliff and, you know, things like that. So it is neat to kind of try to get some of the backstory to some of these things. So with that, we'll take a pause here.
Stay tuned for the next episode of the Great New Zealand Golf Adventure.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.